Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
What's left to be said about Bill Raftery? We've come to a general consensus. It rarely gets better than when a game is in his comfortable care. The paintbrush he uses is so distinct, yet remarkably simple. At 79, he slides with grace and humor and wit around the edge of the hardwood. After last year's national championship game, we wrote about him being as sharp as ever around the edges. If he were a player, his game would be one of quick instincts and a willingness to play his position, but defer to the point guard at the end of games, though he says his best ability is finding a great restaurant with a good bartender on the road. Perhaps it's all a bit simpler than all of that. Perhaps the thing that matters, the only thing that matters, is how much damn fun it is to share a game with him. There's a winking knowingness we all embrace, striking a deep chord, allowing us to have a little more joy for those 2 hours. In an industry giving out soaring contracts to the person people most want to sit and have a beer with during the game, Raftery actually feels like he is in your living room. A trick venerable broadcasters learn by being a regular part of their viewers' annual traditions. I feel like I'm out there to enjoy, and I hope that the people enjoy what I'm seeing, he told the Big Lead. It's the same thrill and kick every year. I don't feel like it's work, but I do feel that I owe it to everyone involved in the game to do the best I can. I do think part of the enjoyment is watching what these kids do and what they're capable of doing. Raftery is mayoral. It started by knowing how to work a room, but he's already worked all the rooms worth working. There's a fun uncle vibe, the kind the family takes orbit around. There's never any drop of unnecessary intensity or overzealous criticism. All wrapped up in someone with deft timing themselves, wrapped in what they call the greatest youthful experience possible. To see the players at their best moment in many cases, and in many cases their last moment, where the vast majority it'll be the last official game they may play in, he said, breaks my heart. It's so meaningful to them. They're unabashed about shedding tears or hugging or consoling one of their teammates. It's a special time in their life, and I think that brings you into their life a little bit. There was a finality to this year's broadcast. His last Final Four with Jim Nance, his partner for 8 years and teammate for 38 years overall at CBS. Raftery said that he was blessed to have Vern Lundquist so many years, meaning he's been down this road before. Together with Grant Hill and Tracy Wolfson, he and Nance have called their share of remarkable Final Four moments, and have been close to rock solid in their presentation. It's the capstone on arguably the most impactful television event on the dial across all of sports in terms of a three-week fast break. I know that Nance is in a really good place because I hear him talking with his kids, and I think that was the biggest part of this, that he wants to be a part of watching them enjoy their growth, Raftery said. I think the decision was made easier knowing he's going to have quality time at home. His first two games in studio, I did with him, and we've had a friendship since from different seats. Getting to know him, getting to be around him, and seeing how much he cares for the kids playing is what I've enjoyed. I think the best part are the dinners after the game or between the sights. Those are the most enjoyable moments because everyone's just Jim, Tracy, Grant, just natural. Onions. Double order. A little kiss. A big ticker. Send it in. He could have his own E-Bombs World-era soundboard. They are tidy and memorable and economical. At his best, he sounds like a peak era SportsCenter anchor doing highlights in a live game. Catchphrase can be reductive because why blame someone for creating something everyone wants to hear so much and giving it to them on occasion? The mind reels trying to estimate how many times he's been approached in public with shouted requests like a band with some fan favorites. You know what's funny? Raftery asked me. I'm not nuts about cliches. I remember early on this man-to-man at the beginning of the game. Really, I just did it as part of getting out of the play-by-play's way. We didn't have the graphics we have now with pop-up pictures and names, things flying on the screen. I used to just do it without knowing I was connecting the letters. Then I'd be in the airport and someone would say, man-to-man, and I'd wonder, what the hell are they talking about? Well, that was me. Going from patrolling the sidelines to patrolling the microphone is in the playbook for a life in basketball. But there's something about a coach. They'll always be a coach. Like if you look closely enough, you could see the faintest tan line from the whistle around their neck. Raftery said, Dave Gavitt told me once, I've watched your team and you should try television. This has helped me be a big part of an extension of coaching, maybe. The first year I missed October 15th a lot. The great thing about coaching that you have and being out of it is the compassion you have for all those who lost. I understand how hard somebody works to be in a game and then lose a game. In the early days when we weren't running out of buildings, I used to try to say hello to the guy who lost. That part of him is most visible when a made basket is quickly punctuated by Raftery informing us all that the player has that in their game. It's the product of scouting work that has to be done before he even gets on a plane. It reflects a willingness to meet the game on its terms and is powered by a genuine appreciation for all the permutations of basketball and individual strengths and weaknesses. It may sound basic, but audiences want to know the announcers are active and authentic in their excitement. March Madness enjoys breezy buy-in from the public, who are welcomed without barriers, and both the promise to have a hell of a time and a track record to assuage any doubts about how easy it is to be swept away to the next under 12 timeout or 63% free throw shooter lining up the pivotal front end of a late 1-1. At this point, it's nearly Pavlovian to give Raftery the same buy-in. He's working, but not making it seem like work. The least a person burrowing into their couch cushions can do would be to match his enthusiasm. Sometimes the simplest explanations are the truest explanations. People like spending time with Bill Raftery. From the comfort of their couches, or from the shadow of the scorer's table, or at a restaurant after the game. It can all boil down to that. Maybe it does all boil down to that. We can analyze the subtle dopamine blast that comes from realizing, certainly not for the first time, he's the exact soundtrack for the moment, and that the memory will be a little more special because he's involved. But that sort of takes the fun out of it. Welcome to the Big Weekend. I'm Kyle Koster of The Big Lead. The Masters are upon us. What a weekend it is. There's something mysterious. There's something precious about this tournament. It both stands timeless, but feels entirely present. Even if you don't like golf, there's something magical about it. It feels like Disney. It feels like a movie set. It feels like going to Venice where you can't believe that this place actually exists. I remember when I was younger, the only way to see what happened on Thursday and Friday was to watch a little wrap-up show that CBS used to put on before David Letterman. You'd get maybe 15 minutes of highlights from the course, this little tiny parceled out curated experience, a little peek behind the curtain. And I think that's kind of what makes Augusta, what makes the Masters so indelible, makes it stand out, makes it unlike almost anything in all of sports. Now, in a world where we have everything on demand, we have eyes everywhere, we have increased broadcast rights, we have ESPN partnering with CBS for the coverage, giving you look-ins, making sure you don't miss a single shot from Tiger Woods, who's going to give it a go out there. God bless you, Tiger. Let's hope you make the cut. The longer you hang around, the more interesting it will be for everybody. But I wondered if giving everybody what they want and giving it to them on demand in this instance made it harder to retain the preciousness of Augusta. So I asked Scott Van Pelt on an open call to media if there was any of that in the back of his mind. And he said no. Why? These are his words. Because Christmas is Christmas. You know what I'm saying? Seriously. When you wake up on that day, no matter how old you are, there's a feeling. I think the greatest things about sports are the things that make you feel. Athletes can do that. Games, venues, and I feel like St. Andrews does that. There's a long list that you can name, but the two that jump to mind are that and Augusta National. And I understand what you're saying. There's more access now. People would love to be able to see every single shot on every single hole, and there are apps that can help you with all that. But I think that even in this world that gets more cynical and has more access than it ever has before, there's certain things that the access to it is going to remain special because it's going to feel different than anything else. I think Augusta National and the Masters are on that real short list of something that makes you feel a certain way. And the minute you hear the piano, the minute you see those shots that are so instantly recognizable, you can close your eyes and see them right now. I don't think you have to work at it to make it feel precious. I think it just is. He's right about that. I think there's a danger of oversaturation in a lot of spheres and a lot of windows, but I think that what ESPN has done is integrate itself into the coverage, working with the Masters, which has a very specific presentation, hasn't cheapened it at all, hasn't changed the allure. I think it was a pretty impressive feat, and I think it's great that we can have both. We can have the best of both worlds. We can have more, but it can feel just as exclusive. And I'm really looking forward to it. Is this Jordan Spieth? Is he going to be all the way back? We certainly hope so. My pick, Tony Finau. I think Tony gets one. Throw a little spice in there. I like a live golfer to be in contention late, maybe in the final pairing on Sunday. It'd be great for golf. Great for drawing battle lines. But no matter what happens, I think what's amazing about this weekend is it's always going to deliver. It writes a story that stands alone, that doesn't need affirmation from the outside. It just is. And it's self-contained as it's meant to be. When we come back, you'll hear my interview with Paul Hembakidis. Hembo, from Get Up and ESPN fame, the subject of a long rambling profile I wrote right as the pandemic was striking. He has a new book with Mike Greenberg called Got Your Number. He'll explain what all that is. I really encourage everybody to check it out. It sounds like a really good text for understanding sports. Wikipedia on steroids. You're going to learn a lot. It's not just for the number nerds, as he explains. He's going on Good Morning America in a few days. I tried to make him really nervous about that, but we talked for about a half hour and enjoy. What was the initial idea? And then what did the idea turn into when the finished product was out?
Sure. There was a day in the spring of 2020, not too long after Rudy Gobert touched all those microphones, but we were all as locked down as could possibly be, especially here in the Northeast, when I received this kind of felt like an epiphany phone call from Mike Greenberg some afternoon, saying that he had just stumbled across the greatest idea in the world and he wanted to create a book out of it, and he wanted me to help him with it. And so in short, he was having a conversation with a bunch of members of the Get Up staff after one of the shows, and they got into an argument as to who owns the number 12, all these legendary quarterbacks having worn number 12. In that case, it's pretty easy. I mean, TB12, it's Tom Brady. I mean, it wasn't much of a debate. It was more an observation that all these great quarterbacks wore the same number. And our boss happened to ask the question, well, who is the actual owner of it? And as such, the idea was conceived. And so that was the origin of the project. And honestly, that's pretty much exactly what we executed. Now, I want to make clear. So the book is called Got Your Number. There are 100 chapters, 100 essays that Greeny wrote, which I supplied the research for, and only 56 of the 100 chapters are actual jersey numbers, because what we discovered is that you don't want to wind up writing a book like this and have to spend all of the 70s writing about obscure offensive linemen, right? And so that's kind of the fun wrinkle here. Like, you're going to see a lot of recognizable chapters with players. Like, 3 is Babe Ruth, and spoiler alert, 23 is Michael Jordan, and 99 is Wayne Gretzky, and 42 is Jackie Robinson, and so on and so forth. But that was his idea from the jump. It's generally speaking the idea that we executed from soup to nuts, and we made exceptions for numbers for whom there were not any obvious great options. And in those cases, we made exceptions like which player might own a record, or which player may have dominated a year, things of that nature. And so that's kind of the conceit of the book. And I think we honestly stayed pretty close to the original conceit, to the vision, and ultimately we're really happy with the product.
We should probably take a step back and explain your relationship with Greeny and also your relationship with numbers. If you could kind of just take us through your time at ESPN, that partnership, and what you specifically do, and why it seems like, hey, if you were ever going to write a book, this is exactly what it is.
Yes, it feels like I was put on the earth to do this exact thing. So my work here is done. I've been at ESPN for nearly 10 years. I was hired as like an entry-level researcher in stats and info. I first got hooked onto the Mike and Mike show in the spring of 2015, and I stayed on with them until the very last day that they had. I was the show researcher for them. We did all sorts of remote events together, all sorts of bits, all sorts of gags. I mean, look, you're familiar with the show. Most people listening are probably familiar with what that show was. And Greenberg sort of recruited me to go down to New York City with him and launch Get Up. We actually just passed our 5-year anniversary from the launch date. And he and I are the only remaining people that started in New York doing the show that are still here. And so that's kind of the upshot in terms of how I started here and my relationship with him. I've been his kind of, he likes to call me his right-hand man ever since. It began as the person that supplied him all the numbers, all the research. It has evolved into something a little bit larger now, having sort of been his sidekick and co-host on his radio show on ESPN Radio now for like the last 3 years or so. And so we've obviously used the radio show as a vehicle, not only of, you know, promotion for the book, but also to turn this into the kind of debate and conversation that is sort of at the ethos and heart of all the sports fans, you know, any sports fan that you might know. We've yet to tell someone about this idea or explain what we've done without someone having some opinion about who should own what number, right? That's kind of part of the fun. Like, numbers are kind of the universal language of sports fans. And no matter how passionately you follow sports, no matter how casually you follow sports, you're at least in some sense numbers fluid. And what I've discovered is that, you know, being able to use numbers to tell stories, my numbers and his words, you know, have created something here that's pretty special. So that's kind of the, you know, 30,000 foot view of what I've done, how long I've been here, and my relationship here with the author.
You were the subject of one of the longer profiles on thebigleague.com, actually shortly before this idea was hatched, it sounds like. How much grief did you take for that?
honestly, very little grief. A few people that read it were flabbergasted by the lengths at which you went to describe my day in detail. But I have no idea how well it did or who was interested in it. What I do know is that a lot of people did reach out to me and were kind of fascinated by what I do on a daily basis. I'm not exactly sure why, probably because you hear my nickname on ESPN from time to time and kind of wonder all about it. But it's probably something of a dream job for a lot of people. And if you had told me when I was like, I don't know, 15 years old, that I would be doing something approximating this, I would have told you that job doesn't exist. And so you brought that to life in a way for which I really appreciate. It was pretty long, but you know, I almost finished it reading it from what I recall.
Yeah, that paid by word. You know, we put in a nice underground pool in the back. So that was a nice thing.
For attaboy.
Numbers have become such a huge part of sports. Maybe too much for some people, but I always make the argument that they have to make sense in the narrative picture as well. You have to mold the two, and you see like front offices doing that, and it's basically what anybody who kind of is going to approach sports from a thoughtful perspective but also want to continue enjoying it. Is there ever a time where the numbers become so front of mind for you that it's gotten in the way of just enjoying sports?
Hey there, did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
It's a great question, and the answer is yes. This might surprise you, but the more and more that I immerse myself in the data, the less and less interested I am in like just the beauty of the sport. And so when young people ask me about working in the world of sports and doing something approximating what I do, I often kind of mention that and say, look, it's the greatest decision I've ever made in terms of my career, but it's going to change the way that you view sports, you know, because when you're growing up, you fall in love. You don't fall in love with the data. You don't fall in love with the information. I mean, you might enjoy memorizing the back of the baseball card or winning the trivia contest or, you know, fill in the blank. That's kind of how I came, you know, to the age of, as a sports fan. But there's also something just really nice about just watching the game and enjoying it and its beauty and its detail and its intricacy and its nuance, right? Like that is sports, you know, and I don't know that the increase in information has made sports better or more beautiful. Like, statistically speaking, isn't the most gripping way to start a sentence when trying to prove your point. Like, ultimately, sports are meant to be enjoyed. They serve no other purpose. And if you're one who doesn't enjoy being hit over the head with data and numbers, I honestly get it. Like, sometimes you just want to watch the game and not be inundated with all that information. So to me, it's not just about like, just because we have the information doesn't mean we should use all of it. The best way to use information, honestly, is sparingly and strategically. If you can use numbers to tell a story, being able to do that once in an inning is way better than using it across the entire at-bat just to use the baseball analogy. So believe it or not, I think there's enormous power in the numbers, but in some cases, less is more, and I think we are going the exact opposite route, especially in a lot of broadcasts today.
Yeah, I wonder if some people have started using it as a crutch almost, where it's almost like, okay, well, these numbers exist, so I don't need to exist as the person who's synthesizing it, when the fans at home are, you know, contextualizing in any different way based on their perspective. So you got 100 chapters, ballpark. I know that you hate rough estimations, but how many of these were just absolute layups where the first thing that came to your mind was exactly what you settled on, and how many changed through the course of your research?
Yeah, I would say that there were something like half that were slam dunks, maybe even a little bit less, to be honest with you. I mean, some of the numbers, the ones I already described, are fairly easy. Like, you think about a jersey number and some of the most iconic ones in the history of sport, they're naturally going to be matched there. But we also wanted to do the very best we could to capture more than a century, really, of sporting life. And if you're doing that, you have to dig pretty deep. So, like, just choosing, you know, the best players that wore each numbers in the four major sports, honestly, was just the very start of the project. I'm looking at my breakdown here because, of course, I had to dump all this into Excel. Why else would I be existing? So like I mentioned, 56 of the 100 chapters are jersey numbers. Among those, I would say at least half were fairly obvious. But there's 44 remaining chapters, of course, that we filled here. 20 of the 100 chapters are records. I'm gonna give you a good example as a spoiler alert. But Will Chamberlain's in the book. Now, if I asked you which number do you more associate with Will Chamberlain, 13, his jersey number, or 100, the number of points he scored in that game, what would be your answer to that question?
Well, it'd probably be 20,000, but out of those two, I would say 100.
This book, eventually, will wind up getting to 20,000. That would have taken a lot longer to write. The answer is 100, in our opinion. Just like we think Roger Maris owns the number 61. He didn't wear 61, but he hit 61 home runs in 1961. And so those, and some of those were fairly obvious as well. What's kind of unique about our book, too, is that, like I mentioned, there are some numbers for whom there are very few players, handedly, worth writing about. So 18 of the 100 chapters are based upon years or teams. And so, for example, again, spoiler alert, the 1972 Dolphins are the only legitimate perfect team in the history of pro football. The 72 Dolphins own number 72 in our book. And that was an easy one because there is no one that wore 72 that came close to accomplishing what they did as a team that year. So I'm answering your question in a roundabout way. But in truth, I would say there are more challenging decisions than not challenging decisions, because once you open up the whole can of worms and you're not going to just do jersey numbers and tag them to four major sports, once you want to open it up to individual athletes, obviously female athletes, horses, cars, etc., you have a whole world in front of you and you have to turn over every single stone. And as the researcher for this project, that was obviously my responsibility.
So it's one thing to say, yeah, Carlton Fisk wore 72, I think, and there's the 72 Dolphins. Obviously, what you're driving at is trying to capture kind of the zeitgeist, the thing that is indelible about sports, which is the perfect season that stands to this day. Do you remember the most intense argument, the hardest call you had to make?
Yes. There are two in particular at the very front of the book that were exceedingly challenging, Chapter 4 and Chapter 7. So Chapter 4 includes Brett Favre, Bobby Orr, and Lou Gehrig. So Favre is probably, in the scope of those three players, the greatest modern legend of the three, obviously, based upon the timeline, but probably the third best among those three in relation to his peers, right? Or in relation to his sport in its entirety. Lou Gehrig is the only player to ever wear number 4 for the Yankees. He was the first person to ever wear 4 for the Yankees because the spot he occupied in the batting order. The luckiest man speech. The first jersey number ever retired, right? Like, that's a – I'm a baseball guy, so that struck me as the most obvious choice. Bobby Orr is probably the second greatest hockey player that ever lived. So, like, if you have to choose, like, again, in Lou Gehrig's case, I think personally, the first number I think of is 2130. We have 100 chapters, not 20,000 chapters, like you just mentioned. Ultimately, spoiler alert, we made the decision that Bobby Orr owns the number 4 because, in that particular case, in relation to his sport, he was the greatest. But you can make a good faith argument for the other two. The other number is number 7, which was exceedingly challenging because it has John Elway and Mickey Mantle and Cristiano Ronaldo. Now, for the younger fan, Ronaldo might feel like a slam dunk. It's not obvious to me that his legend is going to last as long as either of the other two, though. And again, generally speaking, who we're writing this for is the American sports fan, which has to be taken into account. Mickey Mantle, based upon the populace that's going to be reading this book, is probably going to be everyone's first choice, right? Retires with 536 home runs, all the World Series records, and all the stuff. John Elway's case, I think, is honestly awesome. He remains to this day one of two quarterbacks to start 5 Super Bowls, with Tom Brady being the other. He is the entire city of Denver. I mean, if you created a Denver Mount Rushmore sports, and there was an avalanche that washed away the other three faces, his is the last one standing. He retired with the third most yards and touchdowns in NFL history. So those two were so hard. We ultimately went with Elway, but, like, there's no wrong choice for either of those. So that's kind of the tough part of this thing, right? So, like, you're making, there's in many cases, multiple right answers, and you have to justify your decision based as best that you possibly can. But we understand that not everyone that reads is going to be satisfied, but that's kind of part of the fun.
You mentioned something that I think is an interesting part of this, is that you said you're writing this for the American sports fan. Are you writing it for the get up viewer? Are you writing it for the person who would pick up a sports book at the Barnes and Noble? How and when did you determine the audience that you're defining it for?
Yeah, so we have there, not all 100 chapters are filled with American athletes, but as you might imagine, the vast majority of them are. This book honestly majors in sports history, and I'm pretty proud of that. So, like, I even consulted the ESPN Sports Century list from 2000 as a means of, like, let's make sure I don't miss anybody really, really important. So, like, if you're going to pick up this book and just assume you're going to see 100 jersey numbers and you're going to see a lot of modern athletes, like, it's only partially true. For example, Chapter 36 is one of my favorites. In 1936, Jesse Owens might have had the most legendary Olympic Games of all time. In our book, in our opinion, is that Jesse Owens owns the number 36 because of that performance in front of Hitler. And we go into detail, not only the results from those Olympic Games, but also the context behind it. We're covering a lot of ground here. And so honestly, this book will probably be enjoyed the most by older sports fans for whom history is very, very important. But if we're looking to capture the scope of more than a century of history, like I said, that was our responsibility. To me, it would have been malpractice if I would have chosen Dale Earnhardt over Babe Ruth, because that doesn't capture what we're trying to do here. And so I don't exactly know how to answer your question. I think if you no matter how old you are, if you love history, you're going to love the book. But honestly, this is going to be a book, I think, if I had to guess, enjoyed more by the older sports fan who lived a lot more of this than I did.
All right, I'm going to get personal here and ask about, you know, how does this feel? I mean, how did it feel when you were at the beginning stages and you realized you had all the work in front of you? And how does it feel to see it all come together and kind of be in places that you probably never expected to be? Like, I think I saw, I don't know if it happened already, but I saw Good Morning America hit teased and all this. What does that bring to you? You know what I mean? Like, cause you've accomplished some things in your career, but this is obviously in a different sector.
I've come a long way since your 30,000 word profile. So, Good Morning America, Friday at 8:40 in the morning. So for those 10 minutes, as you're going to watch Mike Greenberg, and you're going to see the person sitting between Mike Greenberg and Robin Roberts with his hands shaking is going to be me. That's who you're going to see. The honest answer to your question, though, is it's a very cool feeling, but it's honestly somewhat indescribable because most of this work was done more than a year ago. The process by which you write a book is pretty lengthy and a little bit unwieldy based upon how long it takes to turn it over. And so, like, there are very few people that actually got to enjoy this up until now, even though it's been on ice for such a long time. So once you finish it, you kind of put it on the back burner, and then you just continue living your life. And now it's been this kind of slow trickle of Twitter notifications and Instagram stories and your friends and family who begin getting it and reading it. We did a book signing on Sunday, and like, it was just so cool to have 100 people show up and sign all their books and take pictures with them and answer all their questions. Like, it's for me, like, it's the, you know, the first time in my career that I've done anything quite like this. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm the front man for this. I mean, you know, Greenberg's gotten more than a million Twitter followers, and I'm kind of riding on the sidecar here, but that's, you know, that's fine. This is the partnership that I've chosen, and it's been, you know, super, prosperous for both of us. Honestly, I think what this has proven to me once and for all is that this is probably a good lane for me to occupy because, you know, the numbers that I so enjoy digging up for this, like, aren't really things that you're going to see on TV. Because if you're watching TV now, you're going to mostly see us talking about contemporary things with contemporary athletes and all of these. But there's a huge appetite we found amongst those in our viewership that really enjoys this kind of content, that really enjoys the nostalgia, that really does enjoy the debate, that really does enjoy the numbers and the history. And I really enjoy digging in because this is kind of the reason I became a sports fan. If I had read this book when I was 10 years old, I would have read it five times and I would have been hooked. You know, this is kind of, you know, how I look back on it now. So that's not a direct answer to your question. It's obviously indescribably cool, but the emotion kind of comes and goes, and it's kind of a rush that kind of trickles in sometimes and floods in sometimes. But I would imagine on Friday when I'm sitting there next to, you know, Robin Roberts or Michael Strahan, and I'm talking about, I don't know, how we chose Roberto Clemente over Deion Sanders, but I'm going to pinch myself in that moment and say, how in the world did I get here?
There's something too about like just the different physical medium, right? You can hold a book in your hands and you can leaf through it and there's some weight to it. And I think that like, that's something that we've lost as a society, not to get like too heady, but I feel like when you can hold something in your hands, it feels like you've really accomplished something as opposed to an ephemeral TV segment or blog post.
I think that's a good point. And like, we're going to date ourselves here. But I mean, you and I both grew up reading books and reading the newspaper and cutting out, you know, clips from the sports page and stuff. Like that's what we do. Like that's who we are. I went to Barnes & Noble yesterday, a local Barnes & Noble here with my twin girls are 7 months old. My wife went over there, and I just, there's like a, you know, like a, in the nonfiction new editions section, our book is just sitting there next to like Jessica Simpson's book, right? And it's like, how is this real? Like, how is this actually happening? And when you can hold something in your hand, there's actually something to it. Like I, you're 100% right. Like if we wind up hitting the bestseller list, I'm going to go to the gas station. I'm going to get the New York Times from that day, and I'm going to cut that out because like there is actually something to that. I don't know if the research suggests that there's something more intrinsic or valuable about holding something in your hand and reading it versus reading it on a screen. But you are right. Like the brick and mortar nature of this is something that is special. And the first time that the publisher sent me a box of these and I leafed through it and held it in my hand and saw my picture in the jacket and all like that, it is actually an incomparable feeling. Like I had twins last year, that obviously comes first. Beyond that, like there aren't many things in my life that have felt quite that significant. And I think you touched on something there that is quite valuable no matter how old you are.
Do you remember a moment where you thought, we're not going to get there? Did you have any self-doubt creep in? How did you get past that?
I would say that self-doubt came more before we began in earnest. So Greeny called me with the idea in the spring of 2020. But it was a little while before we actually hit the ground running. Like, you know, in order to get everything lined up with a publishing company and an agreement in place and all those kinds of things, like that's a world that moves at a glacial pace. I work in TV every day. So like everything is so expedited, right? Everything is so fast moving. And, you know, like I'm stunned if like someone doesn't email me back in 8 minutes. to have waited literally months to get this kind of set in stone, that's honestly the only time for which I ever like doubted a thing would come to fruition. But I can honestly tell you that once we got through, I think like very early on in the process, spoiler alert, when I sent him a bunch of Bill Russell research for number six and he sent it back to me with his essay. And I remember reading it. I was like, this is so bleeping good, man. If we can do 100 of these, this thing is going to be great. And we did. So getting like that, kind of, like because these are 100 small essays, this is not something that had to build over time. Like once we kind of got a cadence and a rhythm, like it was just good. And I could tell from the beginning it was going to be good. And that kind of motivated and inspired me the rest of the way.
Is there any part of you that's worried that this press tour is going to tear the team apart? I saw Tannenbaum catch a stray. I saw Stu Gatz corner you and ask you some questions about Greeny. How's the clubhouse?
Stu Gatz asked me to come on his podcast and list the five things I hate about Greeny that Greeny doesn't know that I hate about Greeny. So like he's looking to break up the team. Like he's hoping here we're in this case for the 98 Bulls, right? Like he's hoping this is our last stand. The fact of the matter is our relationship is as good as ever. And I think if the book does as well as we both hope and expect, we're both going to be as rich as ever. So the partnership is in great shape. That man has done more for my career, as you might imagine, than anyone by an order of magnitude. And for that, I'm endlessly grateful. I've worked really hard. I've gotten really lucky. And like I told Stu Gatz on that podcast, the very best thing to do if you show up somewhere is find an influential person to give you a clever nickname and say it over and over and over again on TV until everyone remembers it. That was our shared advice. And that's worked well for both of us.
I think that's what, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the same. It's the same career path. Man, I'm behind the eight ball. What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of the chapters for whom we found a clever option or an option that might be counterintuitive. The example I'll use, and then I'll let you go, is number 26. So number 26 was worn by some great athletes. It was worn by one of my favorite Philly ever, Chase Utley. It was worn by Wade Boggs. It was worn by Rod Woodson. I mean, it was worn by legendary athletes. But we gave number 26 to the greatest marathon runner of all time. 26.2 miles, of course, is the length of the race. His name is Eliud Kipchoge. He is he broke the two-hour marathon in an unofficial race. We go a long way in describing the history of the race itself, its significance to culture, its significance to the world of sport. And like those are the chapters for which I'm most proud. Chapter 67, spoiler alert, is Vin Scully. Vin Scully called Dodger baseball for 67 years. And there are some unbelievable numbers in chapter 67 that like even make my head spin as someone who does this for a living. Right. And so that's what I'm most proud of. Like anybody could have chosen Pete Rose to be chapter 14 and write 500 good words about it using his best stats. Like that doesn't require all that much ingenuity. But we left no stone unturned when it came to making sure that we chose the very best people and placed them in the best possible spots, even if they were outside the box. I gave you two examples there for 26 and 67. I think that's the thing for which I'm the most proud.
What haven't you been asked on this tour that you wanted to get to?
Well, honestly, Stu Gatz asked me everything. He asked me what I hated about Greeny. He asked me what percentage of the cut I'm receiving. He asked me all the questions for which you don't want to be asked or have to answer. So there's definitely like... Having done this, I would say the thing that I have taken away is that I've been so overwhelmed by how everyone has so been attracted to the idea. I'm like one of these days I'm going to be asked something for which I'm stumped. But the nature of our research, I think, was so thorough that we have an explanation or justification for everything. So I would like to sit here and say, like, I've been dying to answer this question about this person. Like, maybe someday I'll be asked that, like, how did you justify this over this and be able to kind of debunk whatever preconception that person has. But the fact of the matter is, I think our research was airtight enough for which I have provided ourselves enough of a defense that we can at least, cast off the onslaught if and when we do wind up getting chastised for whatever decisions we may have made.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save big.